Hey everybody, it's Ramit Sethi from I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
Susan Su.
We've been talking about negotiation. If you remember, Susan is the one who negotiated $8,000 more in salary, 50% increase in equity, and now that she's left that job, she now makes over $20,000 more than you made at the old. Very good job.
Right.
All right, so we have gone through a series on tactics, on mistakes people make with negotiating. We've talked about how you do it, why you do it, and what you do. Now, let's talk about how negotiation isn't just for salary.
Right.
Negotiation is a lifestyle. Negotiate
Absolutely.
Like an Indian, right?
Absolutely.
All right, everywhere you go, everywhere, you know, I'll tell you this. So everywhere, like a military person goes, they're always looking like, how do I bring down that building? Or how do I protect that building? Every time, you know, like a baker goes somewhere, he's saying like, oh, what kind of bread is that that I smell in the air? Everywhere I go, I'm like, how do I negotiate someone until they're crying? Everywhere I go, I walk into a library and I look at the librarian and say, I'm going to make them cry today.
Or at least I'm going to like get them to waive my fees, right?
That's right. That is right. All right, so we can negotiate in many different areas, but let's talk about some of the ones that we've personally done, some of the big wins and maybe even some of the little wins. Why don't you start? What's an example?
Well, you know, I just want to say all of this, since having that negotiation conversation with Ramit back in the diner, you know, 2 years ago, the reason I met Ramit, because of negotiations, since then, I've basically negotiated everything in my life. Everything from really small stuff like saving $1 or $2 at the farmer's market, to saving thousands of dollars on my rent, saving thousands of dollars for my company. And I really, you know, I really do think it's a lifestyle. It's incredibly important to know that you're empowered to always ask for a little bit more. And it's not a bad thing, you know, because if people don't want to give it to you, they'll just say no, no hard feelings. It's fine.
That's very interesting. A lot of people will say, you know, I'm going to India or Vietnam and I'm asking these guys and it's nothing to them or whatever. Okay,
right.
Fine. That's fine. And that's certainly a defensible argument. You know, a dollar is worth much more to them, et cetera. But you have to understand one thing, whether it's in Vietnam or in America, no small business merchant or 99% of them are not stupid enough to sell you something where they're losing money.
Right.
If they're losing money, they will tell you. But if they give it to you, you don't need to feel bad. Well, first of all, I never feel guilt at all because I have no emotions. But if someone like gives me something for 80% off, I'm like, yeah, I got a great deal. And they're still making a small profit.
Well, absolutely. And I think the key is let them decide that.
Yeah.
Don't decide that before you
don't
ask.
Don't cockblock yourself.
Right. So we'll go through a couple of examples.
Okay.
So I mentioned the farmer's market. I always negotiate there, even as the people next to me. So I like to go to this one stand where they sell like these flatbread thingies. And everybody, there's like a huge line. Everybody's, you know, got their cash out to pay the $12 for this little like, you know, packet of sauce and flatbreads. And I go up there and I'm like, you know, I really like your food. I've got $10. And every single time it works. I say a little bit better than that. You know, this video is not about negotiating the farmer's market, so I won't go into too much detail. But the bottom line is that it's possible even when there are other customers willing to pay full price. I've negotiated my rent, and this is, you know, this is the same principle. There are other renters out there willing to pay more than me. But you know what? They're not my problem. I have a relationship with my landlord, and, you know, I will see what I can get.
I like what you just said. They're not my problem. That is a very good principle that you can apply to all of negotiation. Like, oh, you're telling me that the economy's tough, and that's not my problem. Like, I'm here to deliver great value to you or to buy something from you, and, like, let's see if we can make it work. If you have to be understanding as well. Like, negotiation is not about being a hard ass too much.
Mm-mm.
But it's not your problem. You know, if you have something and you're willing to walk away, it's not your problem what their business concern is or
yeah,
whatever.
Whether they can afford it, whatever. Let them worry about that.
Let them worry.
Decide.
Exactly. And if they tell you, look, I'm legitimately losing money. I can't do it. The best I can do is $10.50 or $11. Okay, I accept that. But I had to give it a shot.
Right.
And by the way, the rent thing you mentioned, let's talk about that for a second. So we have the I Will Teach You to Be Rich guide for negotiating your rent. And it's a big deal because rent is, for most people, their biggest expense in their
Absolutely.
20s and sometimes 30s. If you can negotiate 10% off, you're saving, at, you know, over thousands of dollars a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how does that add up over time? And what does it take? You know, it takes investing in an I Will Teach You Rich guide or whatever, calling up
research.
Your landlord, doing the research, spending the time. Now, you were able to do this, and how much will you save over the long term?
I'll save $2,000 a year. So I'm probably going to be renting for lots more years because this is San Francisco. And yeah, I mean, that's $2,000 a year plus the fact that my apartment's rent won't go up at the same rate. Mm. So in San Francisco, we have something called rent control. So that each year your apartment is only allowed to, your landlord's only allowed to raise your rent a very small percentage over the baseline. Now, because I lowered my baseline, that means I'm saving even more on what the apartment would have been increasing in the next years. So you know, my baseline is now $200 less a month. That means that each subsequent year that I live here, each subsequent increase is going to be smaller because it's going to be based off of a smaller base.
Isn't it interesting that people believe they have a fixed income and fixed expenses? And one of the reasons people like are so fanatical about taxes in America is that they believe that the pie is fixed. And every time you increase taxes, you're taking away from me. And there's no way for me to make that pie bigger. And you've just demonstrated. I did something called the Save $1,000 in 30 Days Challenge, right, in 2008. And the first 6 days are very interesting because, it got a lot of press. And so you had, a lot of people who are not my normal I Will Teach You Rich readers, right? They're not making the same incomes. They don't have the same education level. And they were saying, this is ridiculous. I don't even earn $1,000 in a month. How can I save $1,000 a month? And my point was, which I defined clearly on the first page, saving is about more than just cutting costs. Mm-hmm. It's the CEO model. Cut costs, earn more, and for rent, optimize your spending. Absolutely. You're already spending on this. If you can optimize it, that pie gets a lot bigger.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really important to remember that nothing is fixed. So the first offer that you get from an employer, that salary offer, not fixed. Your rent, not fixed. The flatbreads at the farmer's market, not fixed. Your car.
Okay, this is a good one. So I did a car negotiation, and first of all, everyone knows that you can negotiate car. It's kind of like a well-known thing. People are horrible at it. Americans are really bad. That's why Saturn was around for so long. When I heard Saturn, I was like a little kid when it came out. I think it came out in the 80s.
It's not around anymore?
No, it's going to be shut down now. But which actually makes my story even more poignant. In the late 80s, I was 6 years old or something. I think it was the late 80s, and this car company, it's a new kind of car company. Fixed price, fair price. And I remember seeing these TV commercials, I was like, as a little kid, I'm like, these suckers. And that would set the stage for me indeed to negotiate my own car. And I got it for $2,000 below invoice. And how did I do that? I outlined that in a post I made on my website, but the point was, we all know we can negotiate cars. Even still, people are horrible at it. They go in alone. They, you know, and it's like, take an Indian person with you and just dominate them. Buy a couple books and you will see ways to save thousands.
Right.
So it's kind of ironic because for salaries, it's not as obvious. People don't always talk about negotiating salaries. Negotiating at Best Buy, for example, super non-obvious. We can talk about that. But everyone knows that you can negotiate your car, but simply knowing it is not enough to actually do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to have a couple wins under your belt, feel what it feels like, and that's really what happened with me. I had the experience where I successfully negotiated a pretty significant salary increase, and I thought, gosh, if I can do that, then yeah, I can negotiate at Best Buy, and yeah, I can negotiate with my landlord, and yes, I can negotiate on behalf of so I've negotiated quite a few things on behalf of my current company that I'm working with. And that's really fun because not only do you save the company money, but you look really good.
You definitely look great. Actually, my assistant negotiated something for me the other day, which I thought was nice. It actually paid more and more and more for the time that she put into this project than I would have paid her. So I needed an office for a day in San Francisco. And I said, go find me an office. And so she found me this office for one day, and it was $200 or something. And she sends me the quote, and then she actually said, hang on, don't do anything. Let me try to negotiate with them. And so she called them, and she was like, well, he's a New York Times bestseller, and if this goes well, there might be a lot more opportunities in the future, which is true. And they were like, okay, that's great. Well, he should definitely come check it out and let him know that we can lower it down to $60. Done! Done and done. That's all okay. She had to say, all right? And she looked so good to me
right.
Because she did that. She went out of her way to negotiate. And, like, she's my assistant. Now imagine you do that for a company at a much larger level.
Absolutely.
Right? Thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be hard. I recently negotiated conference. Normally when companies go to these industry conferences, they actually pay a lot of money to exhibit at conferences, thousands and thousands of dollars. Well, I was talking with the conference organizers, and you know, they quoted the price, and I said, I just didn't say anything for a couple of seconds.
Silence is a good technique.
Yeah, I just said, okay, well, you know, I'll talk to the team about that. You know, showed a little bit of my disappointment, and immediately he was like, yeah, you know, we can probably work out something. You know, if that doesn't work, we're kind of flexible. You know, done. You tell me that you're flexible on the price.
How much did you lower it in your head? Double digit percentage. It's like, yeah.
Oh, definitely double. I think I got a 25%.
Yeah, that's reduction. Great. And for what? For silence and a couple of tactics that you used.
Waiting a day.
Yeah, great technique. So, I actually remember when I was a kid, my mom, we'd be at Macy's. And she would, you know, we'd find a sweater I wanted to get. And there would happen to be a stain on it. I remember this happened like a couple times over a period of a couple years. And I distinctly remember this because she, you know, she wanted to get a discount, right? There's a stain on the thing. And we were about to go up. And I'm a little kid. And she'd say, no, don't go to that lady. She's like, she's too experienced. She'll, like, she won't give you a discount. Wait for that one over there. And like, you know, in truth, they should be giving you a discount for a stained sweater or whatever.
But how much discount?
How much discount? Are they willing to do it at all?
Right.
And so it really, for me, the big takeaway was you can negotiate anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, there's so many ways, department stores, farmers markets, any place. And one of the phrases I like to use is, times are tough.
Mm-hmm.
Times are tough. I came up with this as the recession came out, and I've been using it everywhere. And it works. And it's true. You know what? It's in many ways a benefit to the company as well. They need your business, and they are willing to now accept a little smaller profit if you say times are tough. So Comcast, times are tough.
Absolutely.
Right? And they're like, okay, well, we'll throw in a year's free.
And the times that I've used that phrase, times are tough, that the response inevitably is, yeah, you're right. I understand. Well, let me see what I can do.
Let me see what I can do. Because you're not being like an ass. You're just talking about times are indeed tough.
Yeah.
Okay. So overall, I would say that this isn't just about negotiating your salary.
No.
It's about negotiation as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's always ethical. It's not adversarial, right? But you're thinking of creative ways to bring value and also to ask for what you want.
Yeah, and it's always worth it, even if you don't get the discount you were looking for, even if you don't get the salary increase you were looking for, even if you don't get that day off that you were looking for, even if you get none of the things you asked for, it's still always worth it because you don't want to be Eeyore at any point in your life.
Yeah, and you see that the worst they can say is no.
Right.
All right. Thank you, guys.